Welcome to a Fear the Boot bonus episode. My name is Dan.
My name's Chad.
This is Wayne.
My name is Pat.
And this is Mikey Motherfucking Mason!
Sorry. Whose volume I'm currently going to have to turn down a bit.
Yay.
Yeah. Mikey took Chad's seat, so I'm like, you know, I better turn the volume down. And no, or turn the
volume up.
Volume up. So yeah, Mikey took Chad's seat, so I figured I better turn the volume down or up.
You just want to start over and I won't say motherfucking this time?
It's a bonus episode. All right, so if you don't
know that yet,
if you don't normally listen to Fear the Boot, these bonus episodes are not edited or organized vaguely as well as our regular episodes are, so expect something a little bit different. What we are going to talk about on this particular bonus episode, with I'm sure all kinds of tangents and irrelevancy, is something that people have asked us to talk about for a while, which is to tell some gaming stories.
So I don't know any.
We're gonna see.
I thought your games were all story.
Wow, how meta, yet not.
It's very zen.
It is. I do like that,
that's
actually.
Right, yeah. How can you have no gaming stories in your story-based games?
Because he throws them all away.
What is the sound of one hand crapping?
Well, what is the sound of one hand clapping?
Crapping.
Oh, I was going to say, I know Pat could tell you what the sound of one hand clapping is.
That's one hand fapping.
Or slapping.
I love that word. Fapping. I love fapping.
I can't fap to that.
It makes no sense. It's awesome.
Yeah, so Mikey, in typical Mikey fashion, brought a whole bunch of unusual and high quality beers which are being passed around, so you have to excuse the occasional break.
Once a watermelon beer has entered the picture, you really can't say good, can you? You find it hard.
Unusual,
you?
At any rate. I had never had a watermelon beer before.
Well, right? So, Mikey, for the listeners, let's give them a little beer education. What are we drinking right now?
We're drinking Upland Brewing Company's Teddy Bear Kisses, which is a stout brewed with cocoa nibs. Mm-hmm. To give it a nice little chocolatey dry.
I like cocoa nibs myself.
Dry.
I'm drinking a wonderful tap water from Dan's faucet. Pat is partaking as well.
Pat, just out of curiosity, what was Cocoa Nibs' most recent film? All right, so what we're going to start with is...
He's not going to let me answer.
This is the sad thing, is you probably could.
Yeah, probably.
Before we got on the mics here, we're in the kitchen, and Mikey asked Pat this... What would for anyone else would be a question that I don't think you can come up with an answer for, but for Pat is a philosophical question.
Wait, no. You can't come up with an answer for it. Yeah. Every man at the table can.
The question was, what is Pat's favorite porn stars? 30 minutes later, they're still having this conversation. Well,
he couldn't answer it because there had to be like these, you know how in a debate or an argument, you have to set the ground rules. What are your definitions of a star?
What is the most important discovery that humanity has ever made? And you have to find some way to like rank that to figure out, well, this caused that. So does that make one more important than the other?
So how do you quantify?
You have to work out a taxonomy of values, I guess.
Who was the first porn star to go ass to mouth, and how does that equate on the long term
really
range?
Really, genre.
So while this whole conversation's going on, Chad is pretty much zoned out and ignoring the conversation. Dan and I just keep looking at each other and shaking our heads, having nothing to contribute at all.
Nothing that they're
that means there. Next time I'm in town, Pat, I'm calling you.
Oh, yeah. My house is...
Last time I drove through, I called Dan and said, hey, you want to grab a beer or something? We got dinner. I was just driving through. I'd be like, next time I'm coming through, it's going to be like, hey, Pat, you know, an adult theater.
Right. I'll show you the man cave.
There you go, Dad. There's your first tangent.
All right.
Actually, your second.
The place we were going to start this show was with worst characters. Now, I'm going to set one ground rule.
What? It's a bonus.
Didn't say couldn't have rules, just doesn't have the same level of editing.
Oh, okay.
The one ground rule is you have to talk about your own. The purpose of this is not to out other people. You have to deal with your own. Now, back in the day when we were really gaming hardcore, I mean, all the time, every night.
Some would say almost too much.
Yeah. And we had a guy's basement dedicated to this. He owned a comic shop, and so he had all these, like, comic hangers, I guess you would call them, like these little plastic sheets for the comic books that you like link together and form into like a wall or a sheet of these things. Mm-hmm. And we eventually, because they were all about the size of an 8.5 by 11 piece of paper, turned this into the gaming wall of fame and wall of shame, where we put up our best and worst characters and gave them great titles. Which, to keep to my own rules, I can't tell you what my favorite one.
Go ahead, tell mine.
Okay.
Yeah, go ahead. I know which one's your favorite.
Chad had a Riff's full conversion cyborg that had been moved over to a generic sci-fi setting, and I cleverly gave him the title of Full Metal Jackass.
That's right. He had four, count them, four arms. And then they bitched at me. See, I made this character. He had four arms, and he had, like, this compartment in his chest he could store things in, because that was an option when you made a Riff's full conversion cyborg. And they, so we transfer him over to the sci-fi setting, which was outrageous and silly, as Riff's was. So he fit right in, but they hated this character for some reason. I don't know why you guys hated the character so much. We hated the character. And it was all this stuff about, they kept hitting me. It's like, well, your character doesn't make any sense because he's a cyborg. He has a brain and nearly everything else was metal. Well, that doesn't make any sense. If somebody, you know, static shock would kill the brain because it would travel all through the metal body. It would kill him. Any shock would kill him. And I'd have to make these things. Oh, he's got rubber treads on his feet. But he weighs 6.5 tons. The rubber would crush it. It was just back. You can't have four arms because a human brain isn't designed to operate four limbs like that. And it was just, Dan, why did they hate the, why did you guys hate the character
so
much? You
know, I don't remember because it's been several years. As best as I recall, yours was not the character that I had the burning hatred for. It was somebody else's character for two reasons. One, these guys were big Japanophiles.
Right.
I mean, the type of people who love crappy Japanese pop culture more than Japanese teenagers love crappy Japanese pop culture. I mean, you just, nothing that comes out of Japan can possibly be bad. And there was a character,
the kind of people that made me dislike anime and manga.
Same here. That's why I disliked anime and manga for so long.
The same kind of people that made me dislike the Dave Matthews Band. Because the only thing worse than Dave Matthews Band is Dave Matthews
fans. There was a character in there who had a sword made out of a dragon's tail, which, first of all, to me makes no sense. It sounds like a...
It's a dragon's tail on a stick.
Yeah.
And so you have two choices.
And they have a word for that. It's whip.
Well, exactly. You have two choices with that. You kill a dragon, you take its tail, you put it on a stick. You either deep fat fry it and eat it up, or you use it as a sword.
Yeah.
It makes sense.
And the sword, because of course, this is in all of its anime absurdity, despite the fact that this was on like this petite little character, this sword was described as being 12 feet long.
See, this is the kind
of
thing.
How you wield this in a hallway.
See, this is the kind of thing where I sit here on this show when we have Johan on here. And I'm talking about, like, the absurdity of the rule of cool. And, you know, you can go big and epic, and but you can only take it so far before it gets silly. And then he comes up with Confederate space dino riders, and everyone's like, ah, in your face, Chad, he came up with Confederate space dino riders. And I'm like, no, dragon tail on a stick as a sword.
Yeah.
It's stupid.
Well,
it's so dumb.
Bitch 2 was true to the anime form. Of course, swords do radically more damage than guns do.
Because guns are boring, yeah, swords are cool.
If there's a big boss guy that comes up and you take an elephant gun and shoot him in the face, D6 damage. If you have a sword, 45 D30.
It was part of...
Because katanas cut tanks in half. And
it was part
guns
of
do nothing.
Have you ever seen a gun cut a tank in half?
No.
I don't think so.
Have you ever seen a sword cut a tank in half?
Yeah.
There you go. Boom! In your face.
I have seen a gun.
Next issue.
Pat has suddenly become the Chris Matthews.
Have you ever seen a warthog strafe a tank?
With a sword?
I think I did see a warthog strafe a tank in a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles cartoon, and he used a sword.
That's right.
Yeah. Oh, wait.
Bebop did not use swords. He used a funky sound pistol.
Was it giving it... funky sound pistol. Was it given to him by George Clinton?
Oh, yeah.
No one knew who that was.
He beeped when he should have bopped.
Actually, he probably got it from Kyle MacLachlan from a desert somewhere.
See, they passed up a perfect opportunity with that, too. It's like Atomic Dog.
All right, but no, the real reason I hated this character... Because of the fact, and this is where, in addition to my annoyance towards Japanese pop culture, I developed my annoyance towards party infighting. He was one of two characters. The other was played by Dawn, and I'll forgive her because she's reformed since then, who were out to do nothing but screw the party. And your character had a...
Well, I married her, yeah.
Is it your wife?
I didn't marry the guy.
Never mind.
Your character, Big Shock, had a really strong personality, which I'm sure rubs some people the wrong way. But
not to mention a compartment in his chest and four metal arms.
That's right.
The characters that really drove me nuts were the two that were constantly... They were a bigger enemy than anything in the plot.
Well, wait a minute. We're talking about gaming stories here, and we're ranting and raving, which is a good thing.
Right.
How did they annoy you? What can you give some? Can you cite some gaming story examples? Things that we hate
for
to talk about.
Example.
Yes.
There's this plot, and the game master, we were younger. The characters were silly. The plots were silly, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, justifying bad characters.
Right. Gotcha. But within that context, within that level of standards, he was a good game master, and he was running an interesting game, and we were having a lot of fun playing it. But I couldn't play the damn game because there's this mystery going on and there's these bad guys and there's these plots and all this politic and he had a really neat universe and I can't do anything in it because every round I'm like, what is one of these fuckers at the table about to do to me? If I want to go to sleep because I was playing a human being, so I had to go to sleep at some point. Here's a list of things I am doing to protect my possessions, because if I don't, they're going to steal or sabotage them.
And the game
went nowhere.
Games went anywhere.
And it's like, firefight breaks out. All these big bad guys, all this plot, well, they're shooting at each other and swinging swords at each other for no good reason.
Because it's cool.
It wasn't cool. It was stupid.
My point exactly.
And this is... And you know what? There are things in the game that today, yes, I would cringe at, but I was enjoying them. I was not enjoying that.
I think that, some of the stuff that Dan's talking about, to give a more specific gaming story, we had a big ship. Because it was a space game, and it was this sort of anime-ish space game. So, of course, the ship was miles long, and it was crazy. So it was pretty cool. It was a rule of cool. That was the whole thing. When you asked him, how does that work? The game master would say, it's special effect number 5.
Yeah, that was an exact quote. It was
special effect number 5.
No, which is a great explanation. It's a great explanation.
I like it. No, I'm serious. Yeah. That's an exact quote. In one of my first games with that group, he said, they're shooting these rifles at you. And I was trying to figure out what level of technology they're at, how to defend myself. So I asked him quite seriously, what does it look like they're shooting at me? Lasers, particle beams, plasma, what? And his deadpan response was special effect number 4.
Yep.
And I'm like, okay, got it.
Fair enough.
Because now I understood the sort of game he was running.
Oh, no, we have to stop because we're going to open a beer bottle.
Nobody had to bring up anything here.
Yeah, I got it.
All right, so while you guys are opening a cherry stout of some kind.
We'll talk about what this is here in just a second. So, to me, this is the kind of infighting that was going on. You had Dan, who was trying to advance the plot, even in a sort of teenagery. Yeah. We're not talking FTB compliant, let's get serious about this game, but, trying to interact a little, make speeches.
Precisely. And I'm not sitting here tooting my own horn, because believe me,
toot, toot.
I'll get back to that, but I have some embarrassing... I have some embarrassing and stupid things
that
I was
doing.
That
used to be on a soundboard.
Toot, toot. Toot, toot. So everyone else was they had these characters, and the characters were all jealous of each other, and they were fighting all the time because it was a power game, and who was the most powerful, and that sort of thing. And there was me who was in the middle of it, who was kind of in the middle between Dan and them, who was kind of bridging this gap. So what they saw, what happened, was Dan is like outside the ship in this powered armor, making these speeches, advancing the plot, pointing his finger of justice at the bad guy, and which were actually nukes and stuff. But they,
I like finger of justice.
So I did have nukes in that game. There's a great spot in the game.
Oh wait.
All right. So I'll get to the enemy fleet in a minute.
So we're all fighting on the inside. So it's like, okay, here's the big space battle. It's gonna start. They're going to open up. I mean, we're talking Yamamoto style. Just everything is going to open up and every alt is going to blow up. Our one ship, which is the huge god ship, versus the entire alien enemy fleet. And Dan's outside. He's like, rah, 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 making a speech, blah, blah, blah. And then everybody else is doing this rule of cool stuff on the inside. And what do? We shut and lock the hatch, trapping Dan's character outside the ship. Because we're doing
Dan's still pissed. I can tell by
we're doing cool shit. Well, like I said, quote unquote cool shit.
My sword.
Yeah, I mean, it's like we're oiling our swords and we're like power polishing our bodies, and it's just like, you know, we're just doing the cool shit.
I'm opening four beers at once.
and then Dan's outside playing the game, which to us is lame.
And then, I get back in the ship. Why? Because I have a vibroblade built into the power armor. Why was the vibroblade added to the power armor? Because of bullshit like this. This is what I'm telling you, this character, you know how Jonathan Frakes' character in Gargoyles always has 35 contingency plans?
Oh, yeah.
This character was a walking series of contingency plans, and only plan A was meant for the plot. Plans B through FZ were all for dealing with the party.
I think I see why they locked you out. This is our fun.
Especially not in that kind. So the punchline of this all, actually, the thing that I think is cool, like I said, to my nominal defense, I tried to play both sides. I actually had gotten in with this group, and I had played with Dan. I knew Dan's style and our group style. And then I was playing with this group, and I kind of got with this group style. And I brought Dan in, and I was kind of like trying to be both styles at the same time. Well, what Dan and I kind of did is that we played a couple of games like this. And then Dan said, basically, well, why don't we try to run a game like this? Now that's very easy to say. It's just like, hey, let's run a more serious game. Obviously, he didn't just say that one sentence and that was it. Remember, this was like senior year of high school.
Yeah, we were
the summer of the senior.
The characters really didn't have names. They were all cardboard cutouts of stats. The games were very objective oriented of get to this place, kill these people. And you did it in the most
be cool,
efficient metagame sort of way, almost power gaming at times, outright power gaming. I then go into this group, which Chad was already in, which was very image oriented, that things had to be cool and sound cool and look cool. But while image may have been the number one,
it was style priority, over substance.
But yes, but nonetheless, there was a secondary priority of story and setting, which we had been sorely lacking. So that's when we kind of came with this idea. Well, wait a minute.
Why don't we combine these
and create a game that has some consistency and some substance,
and this wasn't,
but is driven by story, not by image and style.
Yeah, but this wasn't something that where we said, okay, let's do this. That sounds good. No, we would play like 15 hours a day, because this was the summer of our senior year. We weren't doing, and we didn't have jobs. We had cars. We got to each other's houses. I mean, it was just like we could do anything we wanted. We had this ultimate amount of free time. And we would play these games, and then we would go out for walks. The sun would be coming up, and we're like, hey, let's go sit on the lip of the Mississippi River Valley and watch the sun come up and talk about role-playing games. Literally, that's what we did every single day.
So in Wallace Blocks, I saw my first fireball. I'm serious. Yeah. You know those fireballs that fall from the sky?
Yeah.
Yeah, Paul and I saw one of those one
like
night.
Like a meteor type.
Yeah, yeah. We saw one of those one night.
Not a wizard casting a fireball.
No, because no.
Pat's giving the incredulous look.
I've heard of like meteorites, something like that. I've never heard it referred to as a fireball.
Well, no, there are some of them where the way they fall, they don't look like shooting stars. You actually see like this flaming sphere, like slowly moving across the sky. And a lot of people think they're UFOs and stuff because you see fire. I mean, you don't just see like a quick shooting star, and it just goes and goes and goes. And you keep thinking it's really close, it's going to hit down somewhere, but it never does. Well, but
to pull it back,
yeah, Google fireballs and yeah, you'll find them.
The punchline of the whole thing is that we were we kind of came to this conclusion like, well, hey, let's try and run this game this other way where we have cool, but it's not cranking it up to 11 and breaking the knob, where we have story, but it's not, the story isn't at a 2. We're bringing the story up to a 5, where we have objectives, but objectives isn't the point of the game. Let's bring that down a little bit. And we kind of balance these levels, and Paul ran the game, and it was the same game. It was the same game with Dan and his powered armor being all stodgy and boring, and me and my, well, I played a different character, but basically it was a hard-ass kind of character, and everybody playing their same characters, but it was with different tinted glasses on. And we were kind of running the same game and the same characters, but running it differently, and it was so good.
Yeah, it was
it
one
was
of the
so
it
good.
It was easily within the top 3 or 4 campaigns. Maybe it may be the top campaign I've ever played in. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was unbelievably good.
Oh, yeah, we're not editing.
To finish the story I was going to tell earlier, was there was with the nukes, there was one scene in that game.
Now everybody does.
Where he basically said, we were being confronted by some superior fleet, and I'd insist on there being a bay of nukes on the ship.
The ship shrunk too. It wasn't 2 miles long.
And he's like, you know, well, you're wildly outgunned. What are you going to do? I'm like, well, I guess we're going to have to, you know, jump out of here. But I said, before we do, 2 nukes to say, you. And so he's like, okay, roll a d20. I rolled a 20. He's like, you just destroyed their flagship. Yes. So I believe in rolling on anything.
So, Mike.
All right. So,
wait. We got a new beer. We have a new beer. We
all can right, do
it. It's a New Glarus Unplugged series. You can only get this in Wisconsin. New Glarus only distributes in Wisconsin.
Those bastards.
This is the cherry stout. It's going to happen. I actually think the trend is going to move more and more towards local, the way beer used to be.
Yeah.
The broad distribution is just not going to hold up. We're going to have more and more restricted distribution. So the good beer, the craft beer that's available in your area, is more and more going to be a regional thing or a local thing.
Hmm.
So I think you're going to see more of that. I mean,
my fundamental problem with that, to totally tangent away, is that the local brewers aren't adventurous. O'Fallon Brewery does a pumpkin beer at harvest time, Halloween mm-hmm. time. And that's really about it. I mean, that's really about it. You'll never see a cherry stout. You'll never see like the monk's blood that we drank earlier mm-hmm. with the fig and the cinnamon and all that. You'll never see that around here unless somebody opens up a new brewery.
You know what? You think that, but wait until distribution from other beers is restricted. Somebody somewhere will step up to fill the need. And if not, you can always drive across a state line.
Yeah.
You live how far from Illinois? You know, you can go there. You can get the beers. And when I say regionally, I don't mean, I think that they're going to be literally more regional, yeah, not necessarily by state, but it's going to be closer to home.
It's like a Midwestern beer,
perhaps, or an East Coast or what. We already generally have those distinctions as far as beer goes. But I think it's going to become even more so in the long run because I'm not sure it's going to be a sustainable thing. I hope it is. We are spoiled for choice and I love it.
Yeah.
And you know, I only want more beer and, you know, I drive all over the country. So even if it goes regionally, I still get to have the pick of the litter, no mm-hmm. matter where. But
bastard.
Yeah.
All right.
It's not like I'm not going to come back. Hey, we were talking about worst character we ever
worst
played.
Worst characters ever played. All right, I'll go.
Mikey, do you have one?
No, I'll go first.
No, start I want to hear Mikey's.
All right.
Because I've heard all of yours. I was there for all of them.
I have. Mine's tied.
All right.
One is like probably literal bottom of the barrel, scraping it. Horrid character. The other is the one that everybody else hated the most, that I loved, but everybody else hated. And so,
let's go with the first one.
The bottom of the barrel character I ever played didn't even have a name. I referred to him as Indiana Elf. And he was an elf, wait for it, with a whip.
Oh, Mikey.
And that was his defining characteristic.
Oh, Mike.
If you could have at least said she was an elf with a whip.
I'm just saying. You asked for it. You said the worst character I ever played. Oh, hell, man. I admit that character sucked. I couldn't wait for that character to die. My brother, who was the game master, wouldn't let me commit suicide and wouldn't let me switch characters until the character died naturally. I tried. That is the character that would not die.
This is the thought process that creates this character. What is the thought process that says, I have Indiana Jones, I have elves, let's put them together?
I played with a one-shot. It was an ongoing campaign that I kind of guessed it in years ago. Some, you know, the crappy apartment, the guy who just moved out of his mom's place, and it was milk crate furniture and that sort of thing. There was ramen and beer in the fridge, and that was it. And we were gaming over there. Well, these other guys were gaming over there, and they're like, Chad, you play role-play games, come game with us. I'm like, sure. Playing a Star Wars game, and I make random whatever. I don't even remember what the hell. I think I got handed a character sheet, and I look over at my friend, and I'm like, okay, Cash, what are you playing? And he's like, oh, yeah, my character's really awesome. You know, he has this sort of symbiote, right? There's an alien symbiote that covers him, and it makes his skin all black, like not like a ninja costume, right? And it causes these claws to come out of him, and it gives him great strength. He goes on
and it's webbing.
He never says the word webbing, but he describes webbing, and this I don't know
sticky
how
stuff sticky stuff out,
yeah, it comes out, and I'm just
swing for
and I'm like,
and he can cling to walls.
And I'm like, Cash, are you playing Venom in Star Wars? And he kind of is like, this is a big dude, right? This, I mean, I'm for the people looking at me right now, I'm 6'3", I'm 220 pounds, I'm a big guy. This guy is bigger than me. He's taller than me. He has broader shoulders than me. He has bigger arms than me. He's got tattoos. And this is a tough son of a bitch, right? This guy is a really tough son of a bitch. And he kind of looks down, and I swear he blushes a little in a real quiet voice. He's like, yeah, I kind of based him on Venom.
That's the guy underneath the black suit called Flash.
I never got that far.
Oh, I'm sorry. It was Eddie.
Eddie Brock.
Eddie Brock. Yeah.
Flash is the current Venom.
Yeah, yeah. I can see Flash Thompson is
not. Yeah, that was way before
Flash
that.
Flash Gordon is the current Venom.
Oh, my God.
Flash,
Wayne,
Flash,
we need to go
Flash,
to a comic
Flash,
shop
Flash
now.
Venom, savior of the universe.
That's right, what this was.
So, Chad, what was your worst character? And then I'll give mine.
I don't remember. I mean, I kind of liked all my characters.
This is Chad's way of saying, I've never had a bad character.
Well, I mean,
Let's settle this. Dan, what was Chad's worst character?
I was about to ask that same question. Dan, what was my worst character?
You know,
I'm sure I had some doozies.
Man, worst in terms of most poorly designed, like, childish and crappy, or worse in terms of, like, I hated the character?
Both. What was Chad's Indiana elf?
His I could not tell you the character's name because I don't remember if the character even had a name, but it would have been a BattleTech character that was played in our first BattleTech campaign. And I mean, this was just power gaming at its worst.
Was he the one who had like the 1-1 stats? And
he just totally min maxed. And you had a lamb mech, which is a land air mech, which is something they took out of the game. So it's basically a Veritech. Mm-hmm. And the reason he had it was because for his birthday one year, I mean, I was a kid, I had no money. I'm like, what do you want for your birthday? He's like, give my character a lamb mech. I'm like, okay, I'll give your character a lamb mech. And awesome. I mean, this just nothing about this character made any coherent sense. The one that annoyed me the most was in a Transformers game, which was overall...
Oh my God, I love this character!
Was overall a great campaign, was he wanted to play two human-sized Transformers. So think like Rumble and Frenzy. You know, they're more or less human-sized, like 8 feet tall or something, that basically were two bodies that shared one mind. So it's not like a hive mind. It's like between them, it's like distributed computing. So like between them, there is one mind that controls these two units. And the problem was they were just super subversive, super high-strung, super annoying, and
They had to be quick. They were smaller than everyone else.
But on top of that, they played pointlessly cognitive dissonance.
Yeah.
Because people like, there's two of you. No, there's one of me. No, seriously, there's two of you. No, there's one of me. You have two bodies. No, I don't. There's one of me. And it's like, really? And what, the other thing was the character was super defensive about being treated as small. So at one point, another guy's Transformer, who's more of a typical, you know, 30-foot-tall Transformer, picked him up, at which point Chad crossed one of my GMing no-nos. He shot him. Which,
well, what's my gun going to do? It's like, I'm 2 feet tall.
It didn't do much. But I, as a
size matter,
as a game master, you attack another player, that's a huge no-no in my game. So I turned to the guy and said, if you shoot him and kill him, you killed him, because he's just broken one of my golden rules. And that was the end of the character.
Yeah, everybody had sticks up their ass in that one. I like that guy.
All right,
guy.
So
they never gave him a chance.
My worst character, Shadowrun.
Oh, God.
That's the start of a great
I'm not
character.
Sure anything else needs to be said.
Oh,
Mad Bomber.
Was that the one where I played the vampire?
Yes, but even that wasn't your worst character. I still
that
think,
is a pretty bad one.
No, I'm not saying it was good, but Shadowrun, I was playing a guy who had a trench coat, don't think he even had a motorcycle, but was always wearing a motorcycle helmet to hide his identity.
He did not have a motorcycle because you couldn't afford to buy the car, because I was the vampire rigger.
Yeah. And so instead, he was armed with, like, he might have had a gun, but he was basically just armed with a whole lot of TNT. I mean, think like the freaking Muppet, you know, who.
Is it like Floyd or something?
I can't think of what. No, Floyd was in the band. I can't think of the Muppet's
name. He's the Mad Bomber, but what bombs at midnight.
No, just the Russian name.
He just basically walks around everywhere, just lighting sticks of dynamite and tossing them at every problem.
Yes.
Which was an awful, awful character. Now, as a man who believes in redeeming ideas, I actually brought this character back in a Skies of Glass game, and he was a really good character, where the way I played it was that Chad was running the game.
Crazy Harry.
Crazy Harry, yeah. We were in Montana, and we were in this tiny little village that sat near a mine, and I played it that he was an explosives expert from the mine, not crazy bomber, but simply was an explosive expert who had screwed up setting a charge, and then the detonation had done a massive amount of burn damage to himself. And when you have burns and don't have hospitalization, you are on a very short time before you die from infection.
Yeah.
And so he had himself wrapped up in all these bandages, not to hide his identity, but to try and do what
stave
little he
off
could
infection,
to stave off infection. But he was sickly, disabled.
He's a good character.
Yeah, and actually, it's one of the few times I've played a character who's related to another character. I played him as either the younger or older brother of Dawn's character, and Dawn, because her character was still in perfect health, played her character as being super protective because she didn't want her brother to die.
Right.
And I was constantly on the brink of death because of the fact that I was so prone to disease and injury because of these. And so I redeemed the character into a really neat idea after
and
that.
That was a really cool game. That was one where it was one of the first times I'd ever game mastered, and I ran into a massive, massive problem because I told the party, they said, well, hey, Chad, what's the tech? You know, there's always the question of when you're coming into a new game and there's like a list of equipment. It's like, can I take the rocket launcher? Is it that kind of game where we're running around with rocket launchers? Do we have grenade? I mean, it's okay to say no.
Is it okay to have the mega damage capacity weapons?
Yeah. So they asked the questions, and I told them very simply, I'm like, listen, you can have, this is kind of where it started for me, you can have anything you wanted. Anything on there you want, you can have. Just know that anything you take, the bad guys can have it too.
Right.
And so it wasn't you with your explosive, because you weren't packing TNT.
Yeah, he had some in his inventory, but he wasn't the Mad Bomber. He just
Tim's character was the Mad Bomber. Tim's character had hand grenades, and he used them liberally. A liberal usage of hand grenades.
Yeah.
And
just sprinkle lightly like pixie dust anywhere the characters are not.
And so he would throw this hand, and so I'm like, all right. And so the bad guys who, there was a chase, right? There was like this camp or something, and the guys were running from it. I don't remember the setup or why. I remember there were horses involved and the bad guys took a stick of dynamite, lit it, and they threw it at the guys. They threw it at the team, and it landed right in the middle of it. And I'm like, okay, so they have it, and they throw it, and we rolled it up, and I killed everybody.
TPK.
I mean, just, it wasn't even that they were firing a shot or they had gotten themselves in over their heads. This was part of the plot that they were being chased and they were being, so I put them into this, and it's just like, what in the hell do I do? The campaign's over. I mean, there isn't any redeeming. Like, there's no setup for other characters for going elsewhere with this. I'm like, what do I do? I even remember I pulled you aside, Dan, and I'm like, because Dan had actually run games for. I'm like, what can we do here? Can we have them wake up and they're in virtual reality pods and it was all a game, and then they go back in, and Dan's like, no, that's really stupid.
That's lame.
That's very lame. And actually, you said it much kinder than that, but it was really lame. And I think
we just rolled it back.
I think we just rolled it. I think we just kind of fudged some of the numbers and we knocked people out and that sort of thing.
Yeah, people got injured, but we were able to drag away into the town and blah, blah, blah. We just rolled that back. All right, Wayne, I know you've got some stories right here, but
character-wise, first of all, I think I should be shamed for every character name I've ever come up with. And I don't know if I've been caught on the blatant plagiarism of some of them. I've been in four campaigns with you guys. First campaign, I was playing a veterinarian in Cape Girardeau in Skies of Glass. I went online, I looked up veterinarians in Cape Girardeau, and I took the name from a real person that's a veterinarian in Cape Girardeau.
Nice.
Second campaign, character name was Marcus Cole, which is Statesman from City of Heroes. Third campaign, character named Thomas Elliot, Hush from Batman. Our current game, my character name, Sir William Parks, is a combination of two guys at work's lit names.
Yep.
I should be shamed for every character name I have ever come up with.
Which one was the worst character you've ever played?
Worst all of them have been good.
Most,
I gotta say,
there's been some blandness.
Are we really gonna have to revert back to the live action wrestling role playing in some?
I think that's what we have to go to, because I'm gonna say,
actually, no, I'm gonna throw out Marcus Cole. You know, basically the big dumb guy with a hammer from the revolving GM game.
Even that, I'm gonna put under the category of bland. I think, Wayne, the advantage you've had is coming into a group of role players who have already screwed up and embarrassed themselves in every way possible. We saved you from a lot of your own embarrassment.
Well, I think the problem with that character wasn't necessarily even me. I'm willing to admit where I'm bland and where I'm bad. There were some things that happened to that character through the course of the game. He had a big hammer that he hit stuff with. At one point, that hammer gets disintegrated, and now he has Thor's hammer, where he throws it and it comes back to his hand. Pat gave
so
me
everything
this.
Was a ripoff.
Yeah. And that wasn't he was that your wasn't venom, me either. That you're was Pat gave me that. Another case, he's basically developed a bit of claustrophobia because every time he goes in a cave, bad things happen. So I'm crawling through a cave, and I don't remember who was the GM for that week, so it was revolving GM.
He got eaten by a group.
No, I swear to God, I had to roll for flatulism.
Oh,
multiple times. That wasn't me. That was thrust upon me.
Please tell me I didn't.
I know it wasn't me, because I did not GM in the revolving GM campaign.
Actually, I'm pretty sure that was Pat.
No, I don't think that was me.
That was either
that
you or
like
Dave.
That was during the period where I was missing a lot of games because of personal stuff, so I didn't run anything. And that I did have a character, but I didn't run any of it.
Yeah, I've had some blandness to my characters. That's the only one that I can jump at and say there were some things seriously wrong with that character, and I can't take credit for all of them.
All right.
I never asked to have a hammer that threw. I never asked to be able to teleport Nightcrawler. Right,
well, you never said no.
There was an embarrassing situation you put yourself into. I want you to tell the Sir William versus Lemnel story.
Oh, it was wonderful. So we establish in the first part of this game that there is this really big, dumb character.
This is our current campaign.
This is our current campaign. There's this big, dumb character named Lemnel. We meet a couple of guards. Chad rolls the dice to see how
smart
they
are. He's loyal. And he has an IQ of like 2.
Yeah, Chad rolls a 2 for this guy's intelligence. So we play him as basically this big, giant, muscle-bound baby Huey, essentially. And we've established that pretty much it would take
mice and men.
Yeah. It would take the whole party to take this guy on. So we get to this point.
Or I would take a Rot's rainy day, which we'll tell that story in a minute.
So we get to this point where I'm trying to get past Limnel to get upstairs to look in this room. Limnel is, you know, very focused on his job. So
he only has one job.
Yeah, his job is guard that room.
Keep people from going up the stairs and through the door.
That's it. That's it. That's all he can handle.
I put a hold person on him, shoot past him, grab the door. At that point, Pat's like, I have this.
Well, before you even went up there, Pat had passed me a note saying that, by the way, I've armed the door with explosive runes.
Yep. So I grab this door handle, get blasted down the stairs, land in Lemnel's arms. So Lemnel has decided he's going to take me to see Pat, who runs the town. My character's a bit anti-authority. So at this point, it's like, okay, I'm going to do anything I can to not have to do this. So I'm looking at my list. What is the magic I have? Okay, I pull a guitar out of thin air and I bash him on the head. Lemnel takes this bash, looks at me, and then slams me against the wall 3 or 4 times. I take damage. I was like, okay, ghost sound out of that room there. Lemnel carries me into this room where there's a woman in there that screams about it. He realizes nothing's going on, and he bashes me against the wall a few more times. Every time, my health is going down and down and down. Oh. I swear, I am...
It didn't stop there.
No. You know, I am going through every possible spell I have. I'm not kidding. I used every spell on my list against them. I made light out of my hands and his eyes. Finally.
Pissed him off.
Yeah.
So he blindly bashed you.
He's blindly bashing. Like, he's
so finally, I come up with...
You cast some kind of, like, charm spell on him or something. And the guy has, like, a saving throw of, like, nothing. But he rolls it.
Yeah, it's like, boom, 20.
And so he bashes you into the wall.
My health is almost gone. I've used all my spells.
He's nearly dead.
While this guy is just walking me down the hall, I come up with the idea of, okay, I'm going to mage hand his helmet off. Because this guy is all about, I'm in uniform and I'm doing my job.
Yeah, it's his
job. So I mage hand his helmet behind him. And I'm like, Lemnel, where's your helmet? You're supposed to wear your helmet. And at this point, Lemnel decides, oh, where is my helmet? What did you do to my helmet? And starts punching me in the face.
What's funny is when this little venture starts out, Wayne's character is perfectly fine. By the
full
time
spell list, full hit points.
By the time Lemnel finally delivers him into like the sitting room where Pat's character and my character are having like a war room meeting.
Yeah, very serious.
He
deep
drops. Lemnel walks in and drops this literally nearly dead from repeated wall bashings, Sir William, onto the floor. Yeah.
And as these guys are talking, Chad's like, okay, you can wake up now. I'm like, if I'm awake, I don't let any of them know it.
Okay, wait. Everybody's talked about at least one character except for Pat.
Oh, yeah, we're going to get to Pat now. So, Pat, come on. I know you've played only like 3 characters, but one of them had to be a stinker.
characters over 20 years of gaming.
Oh, I've played my fair share, but I was just thinking... I'd say that my...
And nothing that didn't happen on a tabletop role-playing game.
Uh-oh. Okay, well, give me a minute.
Okay. You telling Beth you're Superman while wearing underoos is not not that type of role.
Did you renounce your citizenship?
No, I'm not a dirty...
Not to Bethlandia, that's
I'm not
for
a dirty commie like Superman is. I'm proud to be an American... Yeah. I would say for me, I'm kind of like what you said, Chad, and that's not to mean that I think that all my characters have been so wonderful. I'm sure they've, you know, other people thought some of them have been whatever, not so great. But I generally tried to play mostly more serious characters, except when we first started role playing. So I'd say that my most embarrassing characters were when I first started because. As I've said on here before, when my first foray into role-playing was playing Dragonlance, and we literally, honest to God, recreated the Dragonlance party, and it was two of us, me and one other guy, and we each played multiple characters. Like, we had 4 or 5 characters apiece.
We did that with 4 people, but we each did 2 or 3 characters.
So I played, you know, I had Flint and Tass, and... I can't remember. I made some other characters up too. I actually had original characters.
Now, were these like by name?
I was like... playing Tasselhoff, now, the annoying little.
Did you buy the action? Did you have the adventures or did you?
We try to recreate my the guy that played our GM. He had them. He had the miniatures too.
So
he had the miniatures, paint everything. Yeah. We had everything. We did. We were doing all kinds. Oh, yeah, Sturm. I played Sturm. I remember that too. And Sturm, he wanted to go find a plus five Holy Avenger. So that was my big quest for him. And of course, I never found it because my GM is at least smart enough to realize I'm not going to give you that, you know, campaign anything. But we did resurrect Huma and dragons and had dragon lances. I mean, it was horrible. We were just it was just a total wank.
We didn't do that. We actually we knew what was coming. Everything that, I mean, you know, so we did the scenes that we liked, and then everything else we tried to metagame circumvent.
We did it all. Like, but yeah, for Huma, we traveled back in time. I mean, we went back in time to get him and something. I forget. It was craziness. Oh. So I say that to me is the bad period in the worst. I probably have more stories about, you know, other characters, like we were sort of in at the beginning, you know, other people's characters that were just sort of horrid and whatnot. But I think that's for me.
Why are you staring at Chad as you say that?
Other people's characters that were just
It's actually not Chad.
Sure. I try to make, I guess everybody does. I try and make characters that are really enjoyable to me. And sometimes that means that there are other people who find them very distasteful and very annoying.
I'm the same problem.
The first combat I ever had in a role-playing game was against Chad.
That's right.
It was our characters had a disagreement. Chad sucker punched me.
I was playing a bad guy.
I tackled him. And at the course of this fight, as we fight, he's like, okay, I grab his junk and I squeeze.
I said I grab his junk and I squeeze as hard as I can.
We play very homoerotic games.
his character was bigger than me. I was a cripple. I only had one eye. I had to fight dirty. I wasn't a nice person.
And to Chad, fighting dirty, it's not like, you know, dirt in the eye or you know, kicking him in the knee. It's grabbing his penis.
His penis.
Whatever works, baby.
It was effective.
Yeah.
Yeah.
His character was bigger and stronger and faster than me. And I refused. Not anymore. I refused to come out, you know, behind
him. Oh, I think you did come out there.
So what's your favorite character you ever played?
That I have made?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Well, not that you've made, that you've ever played.
I've played.
So, I mean, if it happened to be a pre-gen and a con game, whatever. What's your favorite character you ever played?
I don't know. It's really hard to say. I've played a lot of ones that I thought were really fun. I mean, I guess the one that was most like me was this character called Christian, which Dan is very familiar with. And he was this sort of pit fighter. It was a very, I mean, we're talking about the fun, haha, cool stuff. This was a very serious campaign. There was no comedy in it whatsoever. It was a dark campaign, a sci-fi. It was sort of in the future. It was very dark and gritty. And it was one of those no hope sort of campaigns. And I played a character named Christian who was a pit fighter who had lost his arm in a pit fight. And he had actually had his shtick was, not his personality, his shtick was they had this left arm that was a mechanical arm, had these claws in it. Well, he's pit fighting against aliens and stuff who are stronger, faster, better than he is, but he was able to fight dirty and use the strength of this mechanical arm to gain advantage over them and win these pit fights.
Being a pit fighter, he had to have marketing, and that was part of his marketing. I mean, not per se that he was doing his own marketing because he was a little too far gone, but, you know, his handlers and such. That's a shtick, is watch the human who's just got this, you know, set of claws. Yeah. And I don't mean like Wolverine claws. They were like,
no, I mean, they were like 1-inch claws coming off the end of the fingertips.
Yeah, and would try to take on these aliens who are twice his size and muscle bound and tusks and horns.
And the whole thing is that I was playing really dark aspects of my personality. I took pieces of my, because this is my teenage years, right? Mm-hmm. Like actually more like 19, 20 year old. And it was not a good time for me. And so I was taking these sort of dark aspects of my personality and I wrote them into a character. And the character was trying to kill himself. I mean, that's why he was pit fighting. He had lost everything. Not that I had lost everything or I was trying to kill myself in real life. But, you know, you take dark aspects of your personality and you turn them to 11.
Yeah.
And then you make a character out of that. And that's what he was trying to do, is that he was trying to kill himself in these pits and he just couldn't die.
Yeah. And the gist of the campaign was you had four player characters in there. And while each of them had their own reasons, they weren't fighting to win. because this was such an underdog situation. Like Chad says,
the game, dark. There's no hope.
Yeah. Throughout the game, we ended up creating hope, but that was not the goal we set out. It's just each of them had a reason to fight despite the fact there was no hope. My character was fighting on principle. He was basically a humanist, and I don't mean a humanist in the sense of the philosophical sense. I mean
pro-human.
He was pro-human, and so he basically said, you know, I have to make a stand for my people. And he was fighting based upon the sort of warrior's principle, and quite frankly a bit of bigotry. Chad's character was fighting because that's all he knew what to do. It's all he wanted to do. He wanted to die fighting. He couldn't bring himself to actually suck a shotgun.
Yeah, because he was so full of anger. That was the base of the character, but is that he was full of anger and rage.
He wanted to die.
Yeah.
And so he was fighting simply because that was the momentum of his life, was towards fighting. And
it was actually kind of cool.
And because a hopeless cause would attract this kind of person.
And it was actually kind of cool because the character redeemed himself, yet he did not redeem himself. Because the other players in the plot and the whole story, the story of the campaign, pointed him in a direction to where he died. He died fighting, but he actually died fighting for the right thing instead of the wrong thing. The whole idea of the campaign was that there was this alien invade. There are all these aliens, but there was one alien that was taking over everything. They were conquering everything, and no one could stop them, and there could be no alliance against them. And then throughout the course of the campaign, all this stuff we're trying to figure out a way to stop them, and we have a ship, but we're just people in the ship, right? We're not government, we're not diplomats or anything. But the course of the campaign, we've come together and we've brought these aliens, humans and aliens, all these races together. And when we bring them together, they decide not to band together to fight this evil alien that's taking over everything. They band together to capitulate. And they capitulate to the aliens, and there's this sort of planet where they're all meeting, and we've kind of set it up, and it's all fallen apart for us. And there is the ruler of this enemy alien race. It's a very warlike, warrior, honor-bound war sort of
thing. Well, he's got his elite guards.
Right.
I mean, he's not alone.
So my character, and we set all this up, and it falls apart, and it's like everyone has capitulated. I am going to force the issue. And my character, Christian, takes on the leader of the aliens.
Yeah, you literally just charged across like the table at him.
Yeah, and I attacked him during these peace negotiations. So I fought him, and I killed him in this room. And it was a brutal fight, and I actually overcame it. We rolled it all out and all this stuff, and I killed him. And they wore these masks, right? And these masks are all bladed metal masks. I take his mask, I use it to cut off his own head. And then his army is standing outside this sort of base, this house where these negotiated the capitulation is taking place. And I walk out to the veranda on the house, and all these aliens are camped out there, and I take the head and I hold the head up. And I don't say anything, and I just hold this head up, and all the aliens enrage, and then they just descend upon me and descend upon the house, and Dan's character and the other characters get away, and they kill my character, and they kill the diplomats, forcing the alliance to defend themselves, because now they're going to, in a rage, sweep across the galaxy, so that the alliance of aliens that was going to completely give up everything has now has to band together to defend themselves, and then this alliance fights the enemy. So yeah, that was my favorite character.
It was a great story. I tell you, I still hope, and we'd have to find the right GM. We'd have to find someone who can do a really good sci-fi game. But one of these days, I would love to bring those two, your and my characters, back. You know, of course, we'd have to kind of tell a new story or whatever, but I would love to play those two characters in the same campaign.
It was really interesting because Dan's character and my character were really dark, were not related in any way. I don't mean blood relation. I mean, they had like nothing in common. They had absolutely nothing in common, yet there was this sort of unspoken something that made them really codependent.
Yeah.
That made this... It's like, we have nothing in common, we don't know each other, we wouldn't necessarily even like each other, except we're both walking in the same direction.
Yeah, they're both men of action.
Yeah.
They're both men of action, and the actions happen to be the same, and their basic system of values, at least externally, was the same. Now, internally, they had very different values, but their external, the way they worked with the world was very different. I would say that character I played in that campaign was probably my favorite character. Close second would be a character that I played in a Star Wars game, and I know I've mentioned him briefly, but explain a little better. he was a Jedi hunter, and the shtick...
I was not part of this one,
unfortunately. Yeah, the shtick of it was that we took from TIE Fighter, that whole, the circles of the Emperor or whatever, that he was in that organization, and he had this sort of mission to cleanse. He was basically a bounty hunter who was doing this on principle, not for money. And he went out there, and the game master had given me a concession where part of the backstory was Tim was playing a rogue force user. And there was a thing in the backstory where Tim's character was the mark for an actual bounty hunter, and I was about to make the kill as well. And the bounty hunter, not wanting to lose his bounty, turns on me, shoots my character in the head, and should have, by all rights, killed him. And what happens is Tim's character chases off the bounty hunter, then uses all of his force powers to keep my character alive, despite the fact that he's, like, missing part of his head at this point, takes him to an Imperial medical facility to avoid getting himself killed, says, I'm his slave. Because within the Empire, that's legal. Right. Says, you know, I'm his slave. And the game master said, okay, when they piece you back together, they put this experimental metal in place of your skull that basically blocks the force from your brain. So you cannot be helped by the force. You can't receive, like, Tim can't communicate with you on
the force. No healing, no anything.
But on the flip side, you can't be hurt by it. They can't mind control you. They could throw you around because I wasn't force immune, but they can't affect my mind. We play this relationship where here's this guy who has just hates force users because he's like, you know what? For however bad the Empire is, here was this unelected, highly powerful, subversive, manipulative theocracy that ran the Republic from behind the scenes and ran it into a corrupt, bloated Athenian state. And he just hated these people. And yet his life was saved by a force user who then turned around and said, I'm a slave. And kind of out of the sense that he owed him something, basically said, okay, I can't kill you because you saved my life and I'm not a complete jackass. And started working with him. And the two started working towards this common goal, which, of course, put that character going way down the dark side.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, it was this really neat interaction between these two characters. And this was one of the few campaigns I've played that just had so many human elements of, you know, there were personal secrets. And I don't mean badass ones. I mean just like personal sorrows written into the character backgrounds that came out through role play. There was this really neat relationship between Tim's character and my character of, you know, the fact that we kind of had to play the slave and master routine. But at the same time, that it wasn't, they were actually friends, but they were also sworn enemies, but they were friends. And there was just one of the few campaigns I played where romance came in. There was an NPC was introduced. I'm like, you know what? Just in character, this character would be falling in love with her. And, you know, in, she was a rebel, which complicated things because he was an Imperial. He was a staunch Imperialist. And it just on and on and on. It's just a fantastic set of characters. And I really enjoyed them.
So it looks like we've gone from bad characters to good characters, so I'll turn it around on you. Mikey, what was the best character you have ever played?
Five Willy.
No. Although I did have a lot of fun with Five Willy. The best character I ever played was a guy named Hiram Black, and we were actually running a Palladium Fantasy role-playing game.
Ooh.
And I had a reputation with the guys, and this was when I was in high school, with the guys in my group of always having the interesting character. And just for a little bit of context, there was one game that I sat in on that I wasn't actually in, when they started playing, I wasn't there, but I happened to be there for a session, and so I talked with the GM, and I said, here's my idea for a character if you can work me in. And he said, okay, and I was a magic sword with split personality. I had, it was an elven personality and a dwarven personality, and they both had different powers, and one of the characters wielded the sword. And he said, and according to the GM, I was just supposed to sit at the table and wait until they introduced me. And I sat right by Colin, the GM, and I would just communicate with him by note and just slip it over. And whenever something was said to somebody, you know, whenever the sword communicated telepathically to the bearer, but no one else. And so he had just, okay, and then he passed the note down to the bear. It took Billy was a character who was wielding the sword. It took him a while to figure out it was me.
people kept asking, when's Mikey going to come in? When's Mikey going to come in? I said, I'm cool, man. I'm enjoying sitting here watching the game. So I would do, and you know, by the end of the game, one or two of the others had played, but there were like seven people playing. Mm. And it was just a great game, just a fun character to play. Not a whole lot of depth or texture, but the elf and the dwarf stereotypically hated each other and always fought against, but, you know, and I didn't control when the character, when the sword flipped, but so to rebel against this, that I always had the interesting characters and their characters always sucked. When we were setting up to play this Palladium game, I said, fine, you guys make me a character. So they made me a healer because they wanted to give me the lamest character they could. And if you've played Palladium fantasy roleplay, you know, a healer is just that. They have a mystic healing ability. Now, it could be because they're a cleric, or it could be psionics or whatever. All Hiram knew was that he was a healer. And he was fat, and but rich. And he was fast for being fat. He had a really high speed. But, I mean, that was it. He didn't have any weapon skills. He didn't have any weapons. So we determined that he was a bar owner, a tavern owner. So I took Hiram Black, this fat healer, who was nimble, and I gave him a tattoo on his arm of a ladle. And it was over full. Whenever any, and he always wore his apron. And whenever anybody asked why a ladle, he goes, what more could anybody ask for than a full ladle? And I mean... And he was constantly giving advice in these, in the form of these bizarre, messed up. When the sun shines and it rains, there is a party in hell, you know, and whatever, you know. That's you awesome. Should live in a place and eat of its radishes, you know. I mean, this cryptic, bizarre, messed up advice, and he was a total pacifist. He would not participate in a fight. So when there was a fight, he found a place to hide, literally. And they kept calling him a coward, but they kept coming into him to get healed, so they quit bitching about him not being in the fight. And that was my favorite character, is that they figured out at the end that it had nothing to do, and it really reinforced it to me, it had nothing to do with what your gimmick is for the character as far as being a force majeure in a party. It's the gimmick you have of who the character is that makes a character interesting. So Hiram Black, although I really, starting off, I was like, dear Lord, I'm going to hate this guy. He's a fat bartender, you know,
without a bar,
without a, it actually got destroyed. He's a healer. He has no offensive capabilities whatsoever. He's a tactical nightmare.
It is characters like that, that have taught me how little the fun of a character has to do with their abilities.
Exactly.
And I'm not saying I get why people want to play characters with cool powers. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. But I played a somewhat similar character. This was in a sci-fi game. He was a doctor. And he was not a fat tavern owner, but he was just a doctor. He didn't have cybernetics. He didn't have mega rifles. He didn't have armies at his command. There was nothing all that special about him. But just playing this character who had this deep sense of compassion, this not quite total, but near total pacifism to him. You know, this guy who was always looking for some kind of meaning and hope, who was trying to mend hearts as much as mend bodies and whatever. And playing him in this setting where he's surrounded by violence and decay and whatever. It was
exactly
whatever.
The same as Hiram.
And yeah, it just was such a neat juxtaposition.
And you find out when you're, especially when you're playing the healer with no offensive, really literally no offensive capabilities, that healing is in and of itself a currency within the party. Not that you would necessarily withhold healing from somebody who needed it, because Hiram would have never, I don't know, I doubt the doctor would have, that you played, but they start to recognize your value to the party, even though, because I had to lay, as Hiram, I had to lay hands. As a doctor, you have to be able to be next to them to provide healing.
Oh, yeah, because it was medical kits and things like that.
So
yeah.
All of a sudden, we become a protectable resource, you know, because it's not like we can, it's not like we can stand and spam healing spells from across the room or whatever. It's not a WoW game. It's you know, if the ogre gets across and bashes the healer, everybody's screwed, you know, and it was fun.
Okay, you too.
All right, Wainer, Pat.
Best of your four characters you've played.
El Conquistador, well, master of the couch belt.
One of my favorite characters is one that I won't tell the story of because it's I don't want to ruin the Dread the Last Hurrah scenario. So
you'll tell that last story.
Honestly, I'm going to have to go with the character in our current game. Sir William Parks has been a very interesting character for me to play because he's changed throughout the course of this campaign. There have been a lot of really cool moments that have come out of it. I mean, like in one case, we're fighting a giant stone golem. Mm-hmm. And he's essentially became the healer because we had no healing in our party. And I run into...
Fact I wish to maintain.
Pat gets knocked unconscious. I run into the building. I heal him. And then I'm in this building. The golem is smashing his way into the building. And I come up with the idea of, okay, I grab a skillet. I run upstairs. I fling myself out the window past people who have been yelling at me. Because prior to this, I'm out in the street playing a song as everyone's fighting.
So you have guards and you have party members fighting and dying.
Yeah.
I mean, it is like this rampaging stone golem.
Fight
unstoppable.
The golem,
yeah,
fight
and
the
he's
golem.
Sitting there like, dude, like some bursker, you know, trying to get tips like,
he's got to give them their plus one.
Yeah, that's exactly
what it was.
And I had him like, okay, just roll me a d20. And I have rolled a two, right? I'm like, okay, the people in the houses on the second floor who are hiding from this golem start yelling at you and throwing rotten fruit at you. Not because your playing is bad. Your playing is wonderful. But because you're singing while people are trying to kill a golem.
So I've got the skillet in my hand. I kick down the door into this room where people have been yelling and throwing stuff out for me. Push them out of the way. My character has very little self-preservation. So I leap from a second-story window to land on the back of a golem with a skillet to bash this gem that's sticking out of its back that we think is controlling it. I do next to no damage. Dan comes in and finishes the thing off. But from that point on, I have that skillet on my character sheet listed as the skillet of golem smashing. And later on, I had the chance, I walk into a bar and, you know, I jump up on a table and I hold the skillet up and I'm telling the story about this, what I have done with the skillet. You go from moments like that to moments later on in the game where some of his past starts to come out and my character gives a chance to give a speech about how his fiance was turned into an elder and tortured him for weeks.
Means so she died.
Right. But as far as I know, she's now an elder. But
which is a great lie of the society.
So
but his character doesn't know that. But there are people who are in the party, like Pat's character, who do know the truth. And it's just like this. So Pat's character is like, she's quite alive.
Through the course of this character, I've had these wild, crazy, he has no sense of self-preservation moments. But I've also had those moments where he can drop a bombshell on the rest of the players because they didn't know his backstory.
Yeah.
And I blurt this out and I look around the table at jaws dropping because nobody except for Chad knew. And as I played through from the beginning of the campaign on,
there were little things
throughout the entire campaign that were thrown in, things he would say or things he would do that everyone was taking as little character quirks. No one knew why he was doing some of these things, but Chad knew. Mm-hmm. And I could see it on his face where sometimes you're just like, if they only knew why he was doing this.
You know what's funny, Wayne, is your skillet has more backstory than the average magical item in a D&D.
That's right.
It has no plus. It's not a plus two skill.
Yeah,
it's got more of a
skill,
tail.
Yeah, there's more explanation of why this thing exists and where it came from.
I tell you what I hate about D&D. Because D&D is filled with plus two swords. And plus two swords, to me, take away from the story. It's just a magic sword with a magic glow, and it's got plus two on the stats, and everyone's like, ooh, plus two.
You found a plus two sword. How did I figure that out?
You
hit something, and it was too easier to hit.
But stuff like the skillet that Wayne has, the chains that are around Gnarl's arms, and you can tell that story if you want to. You know,
the ceremonial dagger we have in the game that I've killed two people with.
Yeah, these have the stories behind it. They're interesting. They're so much more cooler than plus two. If Wayne came to me, and I'm putting an idea in his head, if Wayne came to me and said, Chad, I want to make this skillet, like, can we just call it a bludgeon weapon and give it a plus one? I'm like, dude, give it a +3. That's an awesome damn story. I mean, I don't care.
I want it to be a real magical skin.
Yeah, yeah, it's not going to glow or anything, but, you know.
You know, I almost don't have the heart to tell Wayne that he inadvertently used an idea that they actually did in Dragonlance, because one of the original members, I forget her name, but she's the tavern wench.
Tika.
She used to skillet.
Tika Whalen. Yeah.
But did she jump out of a second story window?
No. But Samwise Gamgee did hit the cave troll with a skillet in the...
That's true, too.
Yeah. Skillets throughout fantasy.
It is
you're in a good company.
Good company. You have the skillet of Pork Slayer. It glows when pig is nearby.
It glows when held over a fire and frying bacon.
All right, Pat. Favorite character?
I actually have two characters that are.
Oh, please tell me it's the German, because that's my favorite character of yours.
The German from Lucid?
You're talking about my
steampunk,
my mad scientist, right. from that. Good character. I love that character. I wish that campaign had gone on longer, but that's another story. That was fun. No, the two characters that I have, the first character is, and it's interesting. I played a bard the right way, and by that what I mean is I like the idea of a bard, but I hate the class because I just don't like the mechanics of it, and I just don't think it plays well. But we've talked about that before. Refer to X number episode, whatever the hell. This was a bard made by basically taking a character that was a rogue and a magic user, you know, split level or a split class. So I could basically do what I wanted to do, and I took musical instruments, so I could perform. But then I actually was capable at doing other things as well. So it wasn't just parlor trick spells. I actually was a magic user. I was a mage.
No. Your cantrips were just because you're low magic user level. And
yeah, well, actually, no. This was I was even pumped up, too. So I was actually I was a competent magic user. But I could also use swords because I was a rogue. And I had the other. And I had backstab. It was awesome. It's the best combination.
And no one ever expected you to sit around and play a freaking lute.
Well, that's the thing. And the concept. So I
play some victory song now the battle's over.
The way I made this character, it was back in the days when I was playing in Colombia.
Final Fantasy victory.
The way this character was originally thought up was literally on a drive from Springfield, Missouri to Columbia, because that's at the time that's where my friends were playing. They were going to school at MU, so I would drive up there for like a weekend, and we play all weekend, and I needed a new character. So on the way up, I would come up with names in my head, because that's always been a real chore for me, is to come up with names for characters. So
you're telling me.
Yeah, on the drive up, I just would write, I would think of something, and I'd write it down on my little, you know, my day planner book at the time. You know, that's dating yourself. Write down all these names. So I came up with a list of four or five names at the end of it. And I finally came up with the name that I liked the most, but I had all these other ones that were possibilities. And so as I was thinking about this character, I thought, well, I think what I'm going to do is I'm a magic user, so I can use the polymorph spell, and I'm going to use that a lot. So this character had aliases, and it wasn't just makeup job. It was literally, I would just change my appearance and I would take on this other name. So all these other names that I had, I used because it was literally other personalities that I would use as for my thiefly things and whatnot and else like that. And then I had one of the characters was my bard personality. His name was Baldrick, and he was the performer. So the shtick was he was my moneymaker. I would, you know, go into taverns and, you know, perform as the bard and make all the money. And then, you know, get the spoils from that and have all the women swoon. And then, you know, I'd get the suite there and have all my fun there. But then I, you know, to do anything else, I just, you know, polymorph into another one of these characters, and it was fun. And then also this character was chaotic neutral. And the way I play, I was interested in that from the description of it, and I thought the way I'm going to play this is, you know, there's two things. The chaotic neutral, he's pretty much all out for himself. It's what he does, whatever he feels like that is going to get to make him basically happy.
Yeah.
And it's chaotic. So for me, I thought the way I'm going to do this is I had a Deutschmark coin, you know, it's a one Deutschmark. And I would literally, when I would come to a decision that had to be made, I would flip a coin. So it was a little Two-Face-esque, but I thought I've got to play off this chaotic angle because I can't just do what I would do. Right. Because there's got to be a give and take, and it worked out pretty well. So I had this coin. It would come out with my dice, and it would just sit there, and I wouldn't use it for every decision, but, you know, for ones that I thought were really carried weight, I would use that. And I played, this is one of my longstanding characters, and it was just that was the genesis of it, and it just went from there. I've loved that character, probably is about my favorite. The other character that I played was in the same world setting. It was a character that was essentially sort of based on The Equalizer. I watched The Equalizer when I was growing up, and I loved that show.
Your Venom was The Equalizer? Well,
and it wasn't. It was the concept. I loved
not
the,
even a MacGyver. Not, the Equalizer.
No, I played a MacGyver. I liked what it was. I just loved the concept of somebody, you know, that he does something for people, and then that just the form of payment was not, you know, you don't pay me now, but at some point I may need something. I'll ask a favor. I mean, this is also sort of Godfather-esque too, but it works itself up nicely, especially with this character. I was like, it would be nice to have a character that has all these sort of favors from people that he's done something for. That way in the future, when I need to do something, I have a built-in network that I can call upon to get done. And it works rather well. But this character was essentially, he was an assassin. He was a crown approved and supported assassin, basically meaning that I've taken this training and I've gone all through all this training and preparation and passed this, and I've been now sanctioned by the crown to work and to do what I do independently. Like, I don't take jobs. I'm not handed down a job saying, you go kill this guy. But I was more of a lawgiver or a lawman vigilante, I would say, is the way I would put it. I worked independently. People would sort of seek these people out that, you know, sort of know about them. I had literally a symbol that was an emblem, like a badge that would identify me as what I was. So I would just, you know, basically take jobs. And this was my, even though I was a killer, I would, you know, kill the bad guys. I liked that because it was sort of this is my better guy, not the chaotic neutral. This is really a good guy. It's just that, you know, he tracks down the bad guys and puts them down, because that's the only thing about Batman that I don't like, is that, you know, he leaves a job unfinished. So this is my Batman / Punisher character.
So
wait, I have to avoid that topic because we would have a whole nother 2-hour conversation. Lord.
So you're
about superheroes killing.
Oh, so yeah. You're Batman. You're the Equalizer. You're the Punisher.
He sounds like the Phantom to me.
Yeah.
Where he's getting this whole, you know, network of people that owe him favors.
Yeah. Or Moon Knight.
Yeah.
Moon Knight's another example.
Cool.
Well, we're up against time here, and I don't
time work. It's yeah. A bonus episode.
Well, yeah, but you know, I don't edit these. I do have to at least review them and remove the profanities and such.
What?
So.
What the?
We didn't even say anal
with every
monkey
word Pat says.
Anal monkey fisting. I forgot. Damn, actually, I do love some anal monkey fisting.
I had that power on one of my characters.
What power was that?
Monkey fisting.
Anal monkey fisting.
Yeah, yeah.
Anal
well,
monkey
is there
fisting.
Any other kind of
no,
monkey
anal monkey fisting.
Sorry,
is
Dan.
Kind of.
I mean, I tried penile monkey fisting once, but it just.
I
it was
want
too hard.
You to say it.
All right, anal monkey fisting.
And I wanted to go in the episode.
You know, phrases like anal monkey fisting are the reason Kicked in the Dice Bags exists. Now we all need to go back over there just so we can say it and not have Dan edit it out.
Oh, hell, I'm sure Chad was on earlier this week.
I may have been 2 weeks ago.
All right, so there's some gaming stories from us. Obviously, from decades of gaming, we've got a lot more, but we're not going to bore you with all of them.
You guys asked for it.
But next week, we are going to come back to the topic of lying. Chris will be back. We're going to try and see if we get Johan back as well, because we've got more to say on that subject. So, thank you guys for tuning in.
Oh, hey, wait.
Oh,
whoa.
Before we go, Dan got to listen to Unicron tonight. I just wanted to say thank you to everybody who has supported Impotent Nerd Rage. That's it.
Oh, yes. Mikey's Kickstarter project was a big success. He made what he needed to and a little bit more. So he can actually, in addition to the studio work, get some mastering done on the album. I have heard an early cut of the song he's doing for me, and it is outstanding. So I can't wait to get this album. So anyway, definitely looking forward to that. But
I'll never be able to look at the Transformers movie the same. Literally, I will not be murder able face. To look at that. I will murder face. I will yeah. not be
you
able to look at
it. You pointed out that Arbalest looks a lot like murder face, and it is completely true.
Yes.
So thank you guys for tuning in, and we will anal monkey fisting you next time.
Yes! Awesome. See ya.